Well, we're talking now about brand new things that you purchase from a goy or whatever, or was made by a goy, whatever it may be, and they're brand new, right? This is what Rambam says, okay? Now, he gives a reason why. He says, the whore, Yeshonim v'libdon kechadoshim domo. He says, because, take a look, even an older object, in other words, one that has been used, right? But if you submit them to the kashering process that we were talking about, particularly libdan, which would imply, you know, burning it out, right? So it's as though they become brand new again. So if they're brand new, brand new. If they are brand new now, so certainly a brand new item is the same thing. This is his reason, okay? But nevertheless, even though they are now brand new, even so, boitzvil, they require immersion in the mikveh. In other words, whatever they may be, they have to be titled. This is his fil. Okay. Mask for the Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes objected to his reading. He said, Ihochi, if that's the case, if you say that any keli that you get from a goy requires tevlin, so he says, Afilu zuzu de sabala name, you mean to tell me that, for example, if you have, you buy a scissors that is used in order to cut cloth or something like that, that also has to be titled, because if you say it applies to all kalim, you understand? So that's also a kalim, isn't it? A scissors. So Amalei, so he said to him, now he says, Klei se'uda amurim b'parsha. No, they're only talking about things that have to be used in connection with cooking, preparing food, but that does not apply, you know, to other things.
So what
things.
Are you doing, just trying to needle them?
If you wish.
He did those two.
I mean, when he talked about, when
right.
he talked about, you know, yeah. something to cut
cloth.
Right,
right. right.
He was trying to.
Yes, correct. Good, good. Very good. Okay. Omar Rav Nachman. Omar Rav Nachman, I'm a Rabbi Baruch. So Rav Nachman said, that Rabbi Mahu also said the following. He says, Le Shadu, he says, our teaching is only Elo Bilikuchin, things that you purchase, Uchemase Shehoya, and as already described in the Torah, things that, you know, you get, you acquire possession from Goyim. Aval She'ulin Lo. But if you just borrow something from a goy, then it does not have to be titled. Okay. Okay.
Whoa.
That requires great explanation. Okay. All right. First of all, we have to picture to ourselves, what is he talking about? It doesn't mean that, for example, the guy cooked three for food in Afendel. I want to borrow yours. So that makes it kosher. Chas v'shalom. Not at all. Okay. So what he's really talking about is, let's say, something brand new that's never been used. Okay? So, if you have to use it on some temporary basis, for whatever reason it may be, then in that particular case, you can borrow it from him if you know definitely it's ever been used, and then, you know, you give it back to him afterwards. This is what he's trying to say. So
you can borrow a brand new.
This is what he's implying.
Brand new.
Right.
Pot.
Right.
Never used.
Right.
And because you're going to give it back, you don't have to recycle it?
Right. Because who does it belong to? It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the Kohen. He just said a minute ago, which means that you acquire possession of it. You haven't acquired possession of it.
But you're putting your food in it.
Right.
That's what I'm getting.
Yeah, all right.
Well, we're
going to
argue that.
This is what Rob Okay.
Explanation says he's not yet.
Rabbi said no.
We're not talking about purchase. We're talking about borrowing.
Right. Wait, let me finish.
Go ahead.
That was subsequently borrowed from him by another Jew before Samaritan requires Tevila before being used by the borrower.
That's a different story.
That's
already borrowing from a borrowing from a Jew. That's the point, because the Jew from whom you borrowed, he should have titled it, you see, that's the idea. He should have titled it.
Of course, you know, if you've got something in your closet, you just bought an extra, you might not title it till you're ready to actually use it.
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes it can be used in order to take care of some temporary situation. For example, okay. Somebody asked me some time ago about a grill that just bought it. Company was coming. They had no time to go and take it to the mikveh. What to do? So, the way you get out of that is to give it as a gift to a goy and then borrow it back from him. So that you see,
give it as a gift to a goy.
You give it as a gift to the goy.
Yeah.
And he gives it back to you, and you borrow it back from him.
And you can use it then?
Then you can use it.
Even though it's...
But then, of course, I mean, obviously, you know, when you have time, then you go and do it. But this is for an emergency situation.
Right. But then who owns it?
Technically, the guy owns it at that moment, but then he gives it back to you.
But I don't see that. So how can you use it if it's not, hasn't been touched or tabled? It's brand new, right?
Brand new. It's an emergency situation.
Yeah.
They had no time to take it to the mikveh. Okay.
Who made the exception?
Right.
The rabbis?
Huh?
Rabbis make the exception, yeah?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right. So it's a temporary expedient.
It's
a temporary expedient.
Yeah, no,
because, I mean, it's a normal rule. I mean, are we going to go to borrow Caleb from Goyim? I mean, obviously we're not going to do that. Okay. But on a temporary basis, there may be a situation where you have to do something along those lines. Okay.
You know, these situations that sound so strange to us, it has to be that when they were living in those times, that these were possibilities.
Right,
Such things would have happened. Maybe the Jew had a guy working for him. And he needed a pot.
Something like that.
Company,
right, I mean, company is suddenly coming, right.
I just bought a new
right.
a new pot. You can use it as you can borrow it if you want to.
Yeah.
It's right,
Get
on
the ship how close the Jews were living with Goyim, there was considerable indirect possibility.
Of course, there's a possibility. Right. Right.
And it seems that we all take for granted that even the Jews in those days, everyone tabled it or kashered it.
They knew very well.
Not necessarily.
They knew very well to do it, so evidently they did.
Well, I mean, mikvahs were very widespread. I mean, they were there. I mean, Jews lived in those as well. And look, European communities, you know, you lived in the small shtetl and you had a mikveh over there. So it wasn't so difficult, you know, to go to do it.
I can understand it from that point of view.
Right.
Tell me something.
Yes.
If somebody brings me a cake, okay, on a plate.
Yeah.
Brings it from his home. Brings it to me as a gift. I don't know whether he tabled that particular plate or not.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to take that and give it to a goy and then borrow it back from him? Is that what you're telling me?
I wouldn't go that far. right.
A nice paper plate. Maybe put a doily under it.
Right. We haven't gone through the whole business. Believe me, this is a very complicated area. Because in addition to what we have in the text here, needless to say, I don't have to tell you that they expand upon it. Okay.
But it had to have been a very important part of their lives.
Yes, very much. Very much so. Right.
There's a whole book on it.
Right.
All of these ramifications.
They're just possibilities that could have happened. Maybe it never did, but it could have happened.
But
so they have
within
to have
a realm of
an answer.
Because of the way they were living.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Now, we're coming to something now. Okay. Let's continue another line, and then I have to make another statement. Okay. Listen, we're not running through this. It'll take another week to finish. It'll take another week. Dishkefela. It's more important to understand what we're dealing with here. Okay? Okay.
All right.
So.
Say that.
Yeah. All right. Rav Yitzchak by Yosef Zavad Mona Demarda. Be'oivet Kechavim. Okay. Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef bought a kele which is made of marda. So the question is, marda, what's marda? So marda is, according to Rashi, let's see, where's Rashi's interpretation? I can tell. Yeah, he says, adoba, in other words, it was earthenware, right? Which fie bokor, and also animal manure. Mu'uravim. It's a mixture. They mix earth and cow flop or whatever it was, right? The osin they hand clean. And then, you know, they made it into a vessel. Obviously, they must have burnt it or something, I mean, which would sanitize it in order to make it into something, okay?
You can't. A clay thing.
No, you don't kosher it.
No.
But that's if it becomes treif. However, this is a brand new one. This is new. He bought a new
clay
one.
You can't be kosher anyway. How do you
kosher
clay?
You can't.
Correct. But we're not talking about one that became treif. We're talking about, he got a brand new one.
It's new,
right.
New, you don't have to.
But he bought it from
a... He went into the store, right, and he picked up something that it was made of a mixture of earthenware and manure, all right, whatever you want to call it, okay?
Dung.
Okay.
Idol,
he bought it from a guy, all right.
Right. So,
I mean, the implication over here, if you wish, is that maybe Jews also made it for themselves, too. I mean, you know, it's a homemade thing. You're thinking in terms, you know, you have geld in order to be able to buy things. But back in the old days when geld was very scarce, they had to improvise very often. They had to improvise. you know, this stuff can get very hard. I remember as a kid, I mean, I was on the farm, and the cows had cow flop. Well, after a while, you know, in the sun, it gets very hard. Right.
But it's still cow flop.
Sure, it's still cow flop. I don't say it's not.
How do you know what the dirt
right.
is? Dirt. Anyway, any dirt.
You don't.
But the point is, they had, you know, they had some method. They could take it, they'd mix it together, burn it in fire, whatever it may be, and lo and behold, they have something that they could use. Okay? So, he bought this from a goy. Okay? God's fine. So, so he wanted to toivel it. So So one of the rabbis who was around over there, and his name was Rabbi Yaakov, he said, I heard it specifically from Rabbi Yochanan that what? Klei matuchos amurim b'parsha. That in the parsha that you know, the one that we talk about, the Midianites, what kind of Caleb are they talking about? They're talking about things made out of metal. Matechos in Hebrew is metal. Play matchos, in other words, metal vessels. This is what they're talking about. So what is the implication? Then if it's earthenware, it does not require tivlin. That's the implication, okay?
How do you kosher it?
Nothing, clean it.
You don't use it, throw it away.
That's if it becomes treif.
Well, if it's treif, it's not kosher, it's got to be treif, right?
Earth. We're talking about brand new.
I don't care if it's brand new or not. As long as it's bought from an idol worshiper that probably made it, what difference does it make whether it's brand new or not?
The answer is not every material that's used has to be tivled. That's the answer.
Okay.
That's what I'm driving at. Okay. Earthenware apparently from this is excused from being tivled. Okay. Okay. Although I'll be honest with you, people want to be very strict, so they title it anyway. Okay, the question is only whether you title it with a bracha or without a bracha. In this case, you would do it simply, you know, just to title it, but not with a bracha. However, technically, from the point of view of the Torah, it does not require. Okay.
Dishes with a glaze.
Yeah.
All dishes today are glazed.
Right. Right. Right.
So with a glaze.
So then we can't assume that you're.
Okay, that's a good question. I've read up on this. Yeah, and this guy who is big machmir, but nevertheless, he says that if it has a glaze, he says the olden things that had a glaze on, they really had a glaze, which was, you know, like glass, and as we'll see in the next couple of lines, glass falls into the same category as metal. So which means that glass things have to be titled. But he says today, anything made today with the glaze is very superficial, and therefore would not require titling.
So
that's what he said. Right.
Glaze.
Right. Right. That's what he says. Okay. And I'm sure he knows more Torah than I do.
Well, I mean, I read a little bit about some kind of interesting
right, right.
in antiques, and I read about like Chinese import, Chinese export China. The glaze was, you know, the glazes made at that time when you fired on.
Right, totally right. Different. It all depends, right. It says the new ones don't do it anymore. It's very superficial. In many cases, they use a chemical rather than anything else.
As a matter of fact, that leads me to the idea about the ones coming out of China, where there's some question about whether you should use decorated material.
Yeah, because of the lead problem.
It's the lead problem,
right.
and it's not baked in the solid way that the old dishes used to be done with the full treatment.
Right.
So there's some question about whether that doesn't leak out.
Right.
In fact, I just saw something at some store, a home store in East Guam Meadow, that had a very clear thing, should not be used for eating purposes because of the lead.
Yeah, they do that now on
the dye.
Yeah.
The dye can run. Yeah.
What do they do?
They say shouldn't be used for eating purposes. They're decorative dishes, but they tell you very clearly, don't use it for food. Of course, the left could leak.
Right. So now we come to the problem about glass. Omar Ravashi, Ravashi said, Hani kleis chuchis, vessels that are made of glass, horil v'chidish tabru, yesh lehen takona kechli matochis domo. So he says that inasmuch as the glass, if you break it, you can fix it up like metal by doing what? By putting it in a very hot fire. You know. So therefore, he says that the same rule that applied to metal applies to glass. In other words, glass things do require type. This is what he said. Okay? Because they're like metal. So these are actually, according to the Torah, the two types of materials that require Teflon. Anything else theoretically doesn't require. Now, of course, a lot of new stuff that we have today, definitely you don't have to take to the mikveh. The paper plates, forget about it. Even forget about aluminum foil, you don't have to take that to the mikveh either. Plastic, you did not have to take to the mikveh. The self-required. Right, right. Rubber things are not required taking to the mikveh. They don't have to. They don't have to take all those things. Because
technically glass and...
But glass, technically, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the most nasty.
Right.
If you break it, you get a problem.
Well, look, with us, obviously, if you break a glass, you're not going to fix it. You throw it away. What am I going to tell you?
Theoretically, but
theoretically, it could be.
How did they make it in the first place?
Well, yeah, exactly. I remember I was down in one summer I studied in West Virginia, Morgantown. And one of the big industries of the town over there, besides coal mining and the university, was the blowing of glass. So you go into the factory and see how they blow glass and make all kinds of glassware, you know, goblets and this and that and so on and so forth. So, boy, that's hot. You know, they blow pure, very high heat, no question about that. So that's how they do it. Yeah. Well, that should be titled.
Yeah,
it should be glass. That should be titled, right? That Corel and so on. Okay. All right, we'll do one more line or so, and we'll call it a night. All right. Now, the next thing that they have over there is kunya. Question is, what is kunya? So. I'm translating Rashi. Kunya, first of all, he gives some French word, plumiri, whatever that is, I'm not quite sure. But it says, Tilosa shall cheres, the chupin also, the chupio shall avoir. Okay. What he's saying is that it starts off as earthenware, and then they cover it with a glaze of lead. Okay? V'tashmishei al yedei tzoidein, and it's used only for cold things. V'nikach b'dovir, and in this case, it happened to be purchased from a goy. Okay. Yeah, this is what he says, Kunya. To me, it seems that's more along the lines of enamel, because I think this is also really what they're trying to say, except that enamel, usually they enamel not earthenware, but they enamel metal, right? Yeah. But maybe in Rashi's day, they applied the enamel to earthenware or something like that. Okay. At any rate, so the Gemara says, Pligei bo Rav Acha Ravina says, concerning this type of object, it's a machlokes between Rav Acha and Ravina, chad omar ketchila sov, v'chad omar kesofei. One says, let you go according to how it starts out. How did it start out? Started out as clay cheres, therefore it did not require, right? That's his opinion. And the other one says, no, you have to take a look at the end, and since it's covered with lead, so in that particular case, then it's like metal. V'hil chaso kisayfe. And the halacha is that taka goes according to the end, inasmuch as it has this metallic covering over it. So in that particular case, it has to be typed. All right, I'm going to stop at this point. Okay. Avodah Zarah, tonight is the 5th of the month of March, right? The year 2008. We are continuing now in Avodah Zarah Daf, Ayin Hey, Omid Beis, towards the bottom of the page. In other words, 75 towards the bottom. Okay. So, the Gemara begins with Iboilahu. The question was raised. It says, Mashkanta Mai. Now, Mashkanta means, usually, it means, for example, like you hold a mortgage or something like that. But Mashkanta also, in this particular case, has a slightly different meaning. It means, what if somebody used this as collateral? You had a guy, right? He borrowed money from the Jew. And what did he do with, he had to give some kind of collateral. So we're going to discover that in this particular case, it happened to be a precious cup. You know, like a Kiddush cup or something like that. So the question is, what is the status over here? In other words, does it have to be titled now that it's in the, what shall I say, not possession exactly of the Jew, but it's in the hands of the Jew right now. Okay?
Yeah, right.
Right. So that's what the situation is now. So Amar Rav Ashi. So Amar Rav Ashi said, Abba Mashken Lei Ovid Kechovim, Kosa de Kaspa, the Atmale. He says, my father had as a pledge, a silver cup that belonged to an idolater. In other words, the idolater left it in his hands, as a pledge. And the Atmale, and so what did my father do? He went and he toiveled it, He titled it. So now, not only titled it, but the Ishtibe, and he drank from it. Look, he could have simply kept it and not do anything, right? But in this particular case, what did he do with it? He titled it.
He titled it
in the mikvah, right? And then he used it to drink from.
But did he have to kosher it in any way?
Presumably the answer is yes.
He would have, right.
But right now the stress is upon the fact that actually he took it and he titled it. Right. That's what the stress is over here. Okay. So, the lawyer Donna and Rav Ashi continues and he says, and I don't know, he says, Imishim the Kosovar Mashkanto Kisvine Damya. don't know whether it is because he believed that a pledge is like a purchase, or Mishum Dechazel Le'evet Kechavim Dedati Deshkriya. Maybe he saw that the guy obviously had no intention of doing anything other than to leave it with him. In other words, he had no intention of redeeming it. And so therefore, this is what he did. But you have a similar situation as far as Chametz on Pesach. Okay, we know we have to sell it, and so on and so forth. Question is, that the Gemara asks is, what if a goy left chametz as a pledge with a Jew? Does the Jew have to get rid of it because it's a violation of Pesach or not? And the answer is yes, because if it's in the possession of the Jew, then in that particular case, even if it doesn't belong to him, but he has no business having that in the house. This is incidentally one of the reasons why we sell it. All right, we're not talking about chametz belonging to a goy that we have in our position. But even the chametz that belongs to us, we don't want it in our possession. We have to sell it in order to make sure that it does not belong to us during Pesach.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's like to confirm the fact that it's an agreement. Other people simply are happy just to give a fountain pen. You know, you hold the pen.
Right. You just mail it in.
You can mail it in. It's better to do it in person, but barring that, mail it in. What can I say?
Yeah.
You know, it's like I refuse to do any banking with the internet. First of all, I'm a colicker when it comes to the internet. I'm a colicker when it comes to the internet. You don't know what a colicker is?
Yeah. What, when it comes to what?
To the internet.
Oh, the internet.
Right.
Oh.
But Smaitans.
You mean people are doing it on the internet?
Oh, sure.
Of course. They do banking on the internet, absolutely. Yeah. But I like the personal touch. I like to see a teller. I like to see somebody who knows me and that I know them and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I know much like that.
Yeah, I saw.
My
several my wife's
trouble. Yeah.
The ATM machine.
Yeah.
This is only in America.
I never use them. I refuse them. Oh, good evening, Yaakov. How are you?
Hi. We finished our meeting.
Yeah, okay.
Tomorrow morning, if you're there in breakfast and Leon sees that the room looks a little bit differently, tell him it's because of Shabbat we have a big event.
What shall I tell Leon?
Tomorrow morning, if Leon come in and see the auditorium differently,
yeah.
I say, what happened? Where's my chair? Tell him it's because we have a huge Shabbat and we'll be bigger.
So what did you do? You set up the tables or something, chairs?
We set up already.
Yeah. Okay, all right. I'll tell Leon what I see tomorrow. Right.
Thank you.
All right, so everything is ready? I know that
everything is ready.
Good. You have in the Hebrew High, I know.
I have the Hebrew High School, have a lot of
no fooling. Kind
of
horror.
Are they being housed here?
Yes.
Oh my, that's a good one.
Well, we have a lot of carpets.
They're housing about 100 people from the Hebrew High School.
Oh, that's right, this weekend.
It's going to be good.
I'm sure it will. Good night.
It's going to be a nice kiddush, so don't eat.
Okay.
Lot of dough. Should I lock up or?
No, leave it open. I don't know if anybody else is coming, but
okay.
Leave it open. I don't want to discourage them.
It's very late already.
It's very late.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right.
It's another reason why I don't think I'll go too far tonight, besides the fact that I'm very fatigued tonight. All right. So, anyway, that's what we learned so far then about this. Okay. But we don't know what was the reasoning behind it. Okay. So now let's continue. Tana Rabbanan, searchers learned, Alokeach kli tashmish b'noevdei kechavim, devorim shalayish tamesh b'hem, mat bilan. This is a very important idea that he's now presenting. He says, if you purchase something, you know, a kli, of course, what kli tashmish is, we already learned last week, that means, you know, something in this particular case that's going to be used for serving food, whatever capacity, okay? You purchase it from a goy, from an idolater.
Is that the word kli?
Yeah.
Is there any connection with kalim then?
Yeah, yeah, kalim was the plural, the word kli. Right,
yeah, yeah,
right.
I think so.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So, if you purchase it from an idolater, goy, right, so, and varm shalom ishbam shohem, and these are things that the goy never even used them, okay? Brand new. Mat bilon dehein tahorin. Says you have to travel them, and they become become tahor, okay? So it's God's fine. And then he continues by saying, but it's not just tevlin, but what else is required? Koshering, okay? And he goes into the same thing that we had before. The worm shenishtamish bahen oyedei seinein, things that are used for cold things, kagan kaisers for katoinayos and sluchios, as for example, cups or goblets, whatever you want to say. You'll say cups, okay? And katoinayos, those are like ladles or something like that, and sluchios are flasks of something or other, okay? So, in that case, madichon, he has to soak them, umat bilin, and he has to table them, behem tahorim. Okay, they become tahor. How about the vorm shenishtamish behem reidei chamin, things that are used in order to have hot water used in cooking, right? Kigon, as for example, hayoyreis, kum kikamusin, no, yoros are big pots, kum kikamusin are also smaller pots, mechame chamin, things that you use in order to heat up water in. So by gilon, then in that case, you have to boil them out, right? That's what we learned as hagol in this case, umat bilon, and then he puts them into the mikveh, the hein tahorin. The word shenishtamish bahem al yedei ha'or, things that when you use them directly in fire, right? Kigon, as for example, hashpudin, the spits, the askalois, and grills. So melamda, then you have to heat them up to, you know, a hot flame, right? Umat bilon, and then you table them, the hintorin. The chulan shenishtamish bohen ad shelo yatpil v'shelo yagil v'shelo yalabin. Yes, and all of them, that if you use them, okay, before you table them, or before you have boiled them out, or before you have put them in fire, one authority says that it is prohibited. What does he mean, what's prohibited? It means that the food cooked in them is prohibited, according to one authority, right? Vitanya idach, but a different authority says mutar. In other words, the food itself cooked in one of these vessels that has not been used until now. It's a brand new vessel, right, that you bought from a goy. So even if you hadn't brought it yet to the mikveh in order to table, but nevertheless, the food itself remains kosher. You can eat it. So it's a great big kula, I have to tell you. Because in America, I don't have to tell you how many people are running to the table, exactly. So does it mean that automatically the house is treif? Yeah, according to some authorities, yes. But it's not what the halacha is. Halacha follows the fact that it's forbidden. Okay? So this is already a very great cooler for the average volleyball boss. So no question about it. This is correct. But you know, they apply it to a goy. I mean, you go to Rockies or to the hardware store or wherever, so you buy something. Right, exactly.
Well, it has never been used.
Right.
But it still has to be
timed. It should be turned.
Yeah, but if it isn't, it's okay.
But if it isn't, it does not make the food in its tray. Right. That's what we're saying.
Now, the interesting thing is the places that you saw in New Jersey that was Jewish ownership bought new from Jewish ownership, and they were still tied.
Yeah.
They do right there.
Well,
no, but they don't know when it was manufactured.
Right. Oh, it could have been manufactured by a goy. Oh, right, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. If it were manufactured by a Jew, sold only by a Jew, or something like that, then it would not require it. Okay. But, you know, most of the things that we buy are made in China these days, or whatever it may be. So,
We wash and scrub everything that comes in
new
anyway.
Right. I mean, I understand. But this is very, I don't have to tell you. There are those who are very mafmir about it, and they'll tell you that, you know, the house is not kosher, etc., etc. But this is not for the halacha says. Yeah. Well, even they're not satisfied with that, however, I have to say. They say, Lo Kasha, he says, it's not a Kasha, he says, Ho Kamandoba Nesantam Livgan Asur, Ho Kamandoba Nesantam Livgan Mutar. It says, one opinion, the one who says that it's no good, he says, it's because he's of the opinion that if it gives a good, well, we learned, if it gives a good taste, it's no good. If it gives a bad taste, it should be okay, right? But not every authority holds that way. There are authorities who hold that, in any case, it's giving a bad flavor, a bad taste, or something like that, and it should not be used. It's not kosher. So the first opinion that says that it's not, you know, it's not right, it's not good, so that follows that opinion. But the one who says that this is Tom Nefgan, in other words, the assumption is that there may be something in the new thing that you bought that has a Tom or something, and it'll be spoiled once that you started to use it, so that therefore you can use it, and so on. So therefore, that's a Buddha. It's, you know, it's twisting a little bit with golden finger, as we say. So, okay. Giule oivde kechavim de osarach moda. Now it says, Giule means, in the case of Midian, if you remember, right? So, it says over there, you know, that you have to put in the fire in order to get rid of it, right? In order to get rid of whatever there was. Okay. So he says that the Torah itself prohibited, how does it work out? So, Omer Rav Chiya b'reid Rav Huna, so Rav Chiya, the son of Rav Huna, said, Loi osra Torah elo kedera bas yoba. The Torah prohibited only a pot that was used that same day. Come back to that in one moment, okay? Oh, that's the next page, by the way. The lav nesin tam lifganu, because he says that doesn't give a chance, to spoil the taste. But mekan ve'elech lishtori. But following it, in other words, once the first day is over, then it should be permitted. And he says, Gezeira Kedera Sheina Bas Yoma, this is the reason being that this is a decree in order to make sure that something which is already past the first day, right, should be prohibited because of Kedera Bas Yoma, because of a pot on the same day. Now, I'm going to stop at this point, except I want to explain what the situation is over here. It's not very clear from the text, I have to be, okay? We have the following principle, that when something becomes treif, you have a shiloh with something, okay? Whatever it may be, let's say they use the milchik pot for fleishiks, or a fleishik pot for milchiks, or something or other like that, okay? So, the question is, when can you kosher it? So the answer is, that same day you cannot kosher. That's what it means by bas yom. If it happened that same day, you're not allowed to kosher it on that day.
You have to let it rest.
You have to let it rest, exactly. Because the principle over here is, otherwise it'll definitely impart something, a flavor, you know, of what was cooked before into it, okay? So, therefore, in order to kosher it, you have to let it stay 24 hours from the time that this happened, and then after that, you can kosher it. So this is what the principle is derived over here.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be exactly on 24. You can let any time after 24.
Yes, yes.
Sometimes I save up.
12th of March, 2008. With the final page, the final daf in Avodah Zarah, starting with Ayin Vav Omen Aleph, 76A. All right, so we've learned now another principle about when can you kasher. The answer is because, right, there would be a Nesein Tam, of whatever reason it may be, in the pot that, you know, which became treif, for whatever reason it became treif, so you have to let it go 24 hours before you can kosher it, and this is what we call, that the same day is called Bas Yoma, and after that it's no longer Bas Yoma, okay? All right. But if you remember, we also had another opinion that said that under no circumstances would a Nesein Tam Nifgan be permitted. So this is now what they come back with over here. Okay, it's not what we paskin, but it's a view. Okay. Okay, the Idoch, and how about the other man? So the answer is Kedera Bas Yoma Name Mifkan Pigana. Right. That a pot which is in the same day, definitely it causes a pigam, it's no good. But since he holds that Nesein Tam Nifgan is Osir, so he still says it's Osir. So Ramile Rav Amla Rav Shesus. So Rav Amla asked Rav Shesus, he said, Tanan, look, we have a Mishnah that says Hashvudin, Haskala, the Haskala, Yimalabdin Er, right? He says, we have learned in our Mishnah here in Avodah Zarah that if you have spits, or if you have a grill, right?
Yeah.
So how do you make them kosher? You have to heat them up with fire, okay? This is what we call libun, right? Libun. The verb over here is labbein. That's what we have over here. So the noun is is libun.
In
this case, nun. With a nun at the end, right? Libun. Yeah. So you have to, you have to heat them up in fire. Okay. The hot nun, but we learned in another Mishnah, Gabi Kochim, in connection with the sacrificial food, Hashvut Vaskola Magilon Bechamin, that when it comes to a spit or a grill, then what you do is to boil them out with hot water. So obviously there is a contradiction between the two systems, right? Libun means that you actually have to burn it out, whereas Hagola means that you have to boil it out. Okay, that's the difference between
Hagola is using water.
Hagola is boiling out.
And the other one.
Libun is fire, right? Okay. So, Amalei Amram. So he said to him, Amram, my son, Bari, right? My inyan kachim, he says, what has one inyan to do with the other? What does sacrificial food have to do with those things that you have to kasher out of the goyim? So, first of all, I have to mention aside that the Torah says that the pots that in which you cook the holy food. Okay, I'll come back to that in a second. So it says it has to be rinsed and boiled. Okay. Morak meshuta b'mayim. Okay? So that's what it says. So that being the case, why doesn't the same principle apply to food that became treif, or in other words, food that pots and pans of the goyim, okay, of idolaters? That's what the question is. Okay. Now, question is, yes, what is holy food? Okay. Holy food is when you have a sacrifice. Okay. We think in terms of olah, a burnt sacrifice. Now, burnt sacrifice is completely burnt. Okay. Except for the hide of the animal. This is what we learned in Vayikra this week, okay? But except for that, it's completely burnt. So obviously that's not what we're talking about. What we are talking about are other types of sacrifices. If you go through, for example, Ezehu Mekomen, okay, where they enumerate different types, you'll see. You have, for example, Chatos, it's a sin offering, and you have Oshom, which is called a trespass offering, because Oshom is for certain specified sins, whereas Chatos is for something that you did without realizing that it was wrong, and then afterwards you realize that you had made a mistake. Okay, so in that particular case you want to atone for it. I mean, that's the idea of Chatos, you know, it's an atonement sacrifice. Okay, whereas the other one is to take care of certain crimes that you might have been guilty of, okay? As, for example, you were called upon to testify in court and you failed to do so, or something like that. Believe it or not, it's supposed to be emotional, okay, for that. Or you stole something. Well, okay, so you have to make it good. If you were a goslin, so you have to make it good, not only by restoring, you know, to the owner, but at the same time also you have to bring an osher in order to get straightened out with the Rebbeinu Shalom. Now, the chatos and the osher were reserved for male kohanim. They had to eat it. After taking, you know, certain things, the blood had to be sprinkled on the mizbeach. It's in the case of all sacrifices.
Why only male kohanim?
Because that's what the Torah says. That's, you have to read. You have to read Parsha Vayikra very, very carefully. Okay, you have to read it very carefully to see. It says,
"What is the family also supposed to partake of that food?"
Not with the chatos and not with the osham. That's only for male kahanim. But you have other types of sacrifices: shlomim, peace offerings, todah, the Thanksgiving offering. Okay, so those, the owner and his family and whoever is invited to eat along, you know, with them, can eat those things, okay? And part of it goes to the kahanim, and part of it is burnt on the altar, so that everybody has a share in it, okay? The altar, the kahanim, and the people who brought it, okay? But at any rate, when you're cooking the stuff, I mean, you can't eat the meat raw, obviously, You have to cook it. Or you put it over a fire, you know, a spit or something like that. So in that particular case, Kim, if you want to use it again, what do you have to do? You have to kosher it, okay? But the method of kashering that the Torah mentions is only hagola. In other words, boiling out, okay? It does not mention in that connection that you have to have libun burning out, okay? So there's a contradiction between the two methods. That being the case, this is what he's saying to him. He says, "My inyan kacha mesum yulei." Tell me, what does one have to do with the other? Hocha hetera bala hosom isura bala. In the case of kachim, the meat was kosher to begin with, right? So what did the pot swallow, literally? In other words, what did it absorb? It absorbed what was kosher. Whereas in the case of the kachim, in other words, the idolater is cooking, so obviously that was something which is prohibited, the surah, okay? So how can you compare the two? So Omar Rava, so Rava comes up with a suggestion. he says, finally, the final analysis, ki kapolit is surah kapolit. He says, look, whatever is being eliminated, you know, that was strayed from this, now being eliminated from it, he says, it's something that was prohibited. Okay. Elohim HaRava, but says Rava instead, my Hagola, says Lami Shtifa Umarika. What do we mean by the Hagola? In other words, what do we mean by the boiling? He says, it means soaking it, putting it in the mikveh, and so on and so forth. That's what we mean. So Amalei Abaye, so Abaye says to him, "Mi domi merika v'shtifa b'tzayne." Mi domi, he says, can you make a comparison? He says, "Merika u'shtifa b'tzayne." You say that you have to rinse it out, right, and soak it, and so on. This applies to something which is cold, whereas hagola bechabin. Hagola involves using boiling water. Elo Omar Abaye. So Abaye says, Yagid Olov Reo. He says, one neighbor informs about the other, meaning each Mishnah has something to say that's pertinent to the other one. Tana Hachal Dibun. In the case of the Avodah Zorah, what did we learn? That you have to have libun, right? You have to burn it out, right? The huhadin lahagola. And what follows likewise is that you also have to boil it out, he says. He says you have to do both processes, both of them. Tada hosam hagola, the huhadin lahagola. In the other case, namely in the kachim, right? So there, the Tana of the Mishnah mentions boiling out, but the same applies to Liban, right? That it also would require burning out. So Amalei Rava, so Rava says to Abaye, he says, Yachi, if that's the case, so why can't we learn both of these things that you say we require in one Mishnah? Why do we have to have two different Mishnahs? The Lisne Chada, the Ida Charite, and let's learn also the other process and the other Mishnah that you mentioned. In other words, let's learn both in connection with the Avodah Zorah, Caitlin, and also learn likewise that you need the two processes in connection with Kachim. The Lema Yagin Olav Reo, and say, you know, that one informs the other. Elam Arava. But, says Rava, no. He says, kochim, again, sacrificial food, he says, ayduta bayo. The reason for that is, kind of Rav Nachman, Omar Rava Baravua, is in accordance with what Rav Nachman said in the name of Rava Baravua, the Omar who says, Kol Yom V'Yom Nase Gil L'Chaveiro. He says, in the Beis HaMikdash, every single day, whatever is being done already is causing the previous thing to you know, to be nullified, so to speak. Okay. Tidach Shlomim. So they raise a question. Okay. So far, you follow. I mean, that he says every single day. In other words, you have one sacrifice after another, right? So even time that you're cooking a sacrifice, it's the very same day. So it already takes care of whatever was there in it, and it's not going to be a nascent time of gum and so on, because after all, this is sacrificial food, right?
Right.
Right.
So,
and it's all kosher, of course.
So
it's all kosher.
They
don't have to re-kosher. This is what he says. But it does say, however, that you have to Morak Veshutah B'mayim. It has to be.
Right.
But the Torah does say Morak Veshutah B'mayim. The Torah still says that it has to be rinsed in water, right? It has to be cleaned and rinsed in water.
Oh.
So, all right, so in between you give it some rinse, right? And
yeah,
then, but you use it again. Okay. Okay.
Rinse it out a little bit.
Right, right. Fodak, right. Right. Nasigul Chavir. It says, so an objection is raised to this because it says, Tidach Shlomim. Okay. Good, I'll grant you that if the sacrifice is shlomim, okay? Peace offerings, right? The kaven de lishnei yomin misakle, right? Inasmuch as they're eaten over a two-day period, so mekabi de dehave noso, this is before it becomes noso. So this gets rid of that. Okay, now I have to explain what all this is all about. Okay, all right. When we take a look again, you know, this week we're reading by Yikra. You really have to read it with a magnifying glass. I'm telling you right now. Okay, and see, because they mention different sacrifices, and each sacrifice involves also what eating period is involved. Not talking about the Ola, of course, the burnt offering, but I am talking about other types of sacrifice. Chata, Shlomim, and so on. All right. In the case of Shlomim, they may be eaten in Shnei Yomim V'Laila Echad. I'm quoting now Ezeh Mekom Mishal Tzvachim, okay? Means it can be eaten over 2 days with one intervening evening. In other words, you offer up a sacrifice, let's say on Sunday, right? So you start eating it on Sunday. You can eat it Sunday night, okay? And you can finish up eating it on Monday. Okay?
Now we learn what to do with leftovers.
Yeah, okay, so far so good. Now what do you do with leftovers after Monday?
You have to burn them.
That has to be burnt. That's what they call dosar. Okay. What is left over has to be burnt. You're not allowed to eat that, because that is then considered, you know, something which no good. So no. Okay? So he says, all right, I'll accept that argument in the case of Shlomim, because, you know, you have 2 days in order to eat it. But what are you going to do, he says, right, Ela chatos, but what about chatos? Kaven el yom v'layla misaklo, inasmuch as it has to be eaten that day and that night. But when does it become nosar? The following day. It's already nosar, right? So if that's the case, kiba vashel bo ha'idna chatos. I mean, also, if right now he cooks chatos, so immediately it becomes nosar the following morning. Ki odem avashal bo lebachor, right? And if he does cook in this pot on the following day, in which he cooked the chatos, right? Or shlomim or chatos, whether it makes no difference whether it's going to be shlomim or chatos. Kapolik nosar, the nosar is there, right? And what did we say? Nosar is prohibited, right? Nosar the chatos. And guess what? That nosar is now mixed with the new chatos and the new shlomim that you're cooking the lemacha of the following day, right? So in that particular case, it's going to do what? It's going to make a treif, right? It's going to make a pigle, right? Exactly. It's going to make a pigle. It's going to be treif. Got to get rid of it. Got to burn it. So on and so forth. So in that case, what have you gained as a result of that? Incidentally, I don't know why they don't ask the question about Toda, because Toda is similar in that it has to be eaten that day and that night, and you cannot carry that over to the following day. Of course, I said, you know, you invite your family, friends, etc., you know, the Kohanim, everybody has a share in it, so you try to make sure that you eat it by the time that before morning of the following day. Okay. But in that respect, it would be similar to chatos. Of course, it's different in other respects, because chatos, as I said, can only be eaten by a male Kohen or male Kohanim, whereas the Toda is shared by everybody. Okay.
It's similar in terms of the the Paschal lamb, the
yes, absolutely right. Exactly. In other words, you have to eat the Paschal lamb by midnight, because after that it also becomes nosar.
Right. And if absolutely it's left over, they would also have to burn it?
Yes. Yes. It can no longer be eaten after midnight.
Right.
Okay. In a necho ela at chatzos. It's only Edda, it can only be eaten until midnight.
They didn't have ice boxes.
No, of course they didn't have. At best, I mean, it's possible that they could soak it in cold water, or maybe in areas where they could make ice. If you lived in the mountainous area or something like that, you know, you can have ice from snow or something like that. So that might be used for refrigeration. But in general, they didn't have the kind of refrigeration that we had, and so it had to be eaten as fast as possible in order to make sure that it doesn't spoil. But since it's holy food, so naturally it has that additional element of holiness, and it has to be within the limits that the Torah itself had to say. So, getting back again to this argument between Rava and Abaye, okay. Chatos kapolik noso, the chatos, right, so the haidna yebachatos shlomim the mocha, right, okay. And haidna hoda bevashel bar, and haidna shlomim adonik ha shalim zimnayu. So, in that the case, so he says, look, you have, if you have shlomim and chatos right now, so the following day, and shlomim the following day, that you started eating yesterday together, so in that particular case, then what do we find? That on the second day, the time is also up, because chatos is just the first day, but you started shlomim the same day, and since shlomim you can eat on the following day, so in any case the following day the time is up in any case,
because it was adulterated.
Right, okay. So Amri Lotzmicha. So they say, okay, It's not really necessary to go into this whole business. The chibavashel bo chatos, because when he would cook a chatos, the chatos de la machar ul shlomim de esbol bahane hadode koshim. Have you heard of mevashel shlomim? Yeah. What am I reading the same thing over again? Okay. So, Rapapa Omar, high career, high low career. Rapapa says, one becomes hard, literally frozen, but career today means cool in Hebrew, but here it means like it becomes hardened, okay? And the other one doesn't become hardened. I guess what he's trying to say over here says, all right, high career, Rapapa, high career, yeah. He says, the oil of the kachim is sur polit, all right. He says, in kachim, there's always a possibility, you know, that something is wrong. And therefore, the kasha is, why don't we have libun in order to do it? In addition, you know, to the rinsing out of the pots and pans and the Beis HaMikdash. He's not asking this question really about the pots and pans of Eved Zara. But there. So he says, one is hardened, and the other one is not. And Rav Ashi Omar Li Yodam Kal Mor Miyakor. He says, let's get back to what we said to begin with. He says, Hocha Etera Bola, Hocha Yisura Bola. He says, look, simply in the case of Kachim, what? Whatever it absorbed was okay, it was mutar, right, it was kosher. And in the case of Aveda Zora, whatever it absorbed what was not kosher. With the Kakasha Lachor, and you're asking Kakasha, he says, oh, what's difficult to you? The Be'ido, the Kopolit, the Sura Kopolit, Be'ene. That, let's see, did I skip a line again? Yeah, I think I did. Yeah. The Kokasha, he says, the Be'ida, at now, he says, the Kopolit, the Sura, when it is, you know, you have to get rid of whatever is prohibited, so Kopolit Be'ede. It comes out exactly what it was when it went in. So, at any rate, first of all, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash right now. So, to a certain extent, this is theoretical, all this business, okay? But what is the practical? The practical is what we've been saying all along, that we have to know the difference between Libun and Hagola, that Libun is burning out, Hagola is boiling out, right? For certain things that are thrown in, it's enough just to simply to rinse them and to soak them, okay? What you get from Aveda Zora, what you buy from Aveda Zora, we learned that you have to tovel it in a mikveh, but we had a very important principle that was discussed last week, whether the food cooked in a pot which was not toveled. I mean, you buy a brand new pot from a goy, the hardware store or something like that. Whether, if you cook food in it, is the food treif or not? And what did we learn? We learned the food does not become treif. This is what we learned. Even though there is a theory that's, you know, those who want to be machmir will tell you it's treif. But those who want to be mekel, they say in reality it's not treif, that food. Okay. So these are the things that we learned. Yes. Yeah, brand new, of course. Yeah. Right, I'm not talking about something that was used. It's a different story. Okay. Now, finally, the question is, what is Liban? How hot does it have to be? This is what they discussed over here. V'yad kamo malabdan. To what extent does he have to burn it out? So Omar Rabbani says, ad she'tashir klipasan, until that point where it's going to shed the first layer on it. That's what I'm wondering myself. I mean, because it's not the kind of things that we are familiar with right now.
First layer of what?
Right, the first layer of what is exactly what the question is. First layer of the pot, I don't know.
We had an enamel pot, which they had to cook until the enamel went off.
Are we talking about burning?
So obvious, huh?
Burning.
Well, wouldn't it mean...
No, we're talking about cooking.
We're talking about cooking.
Magilon, right.
And the first layer...
Excuse me, no, it's malabdan. Excuse me, malabdan.
It's
burning it out, right.
Your Shami says in Lubbock,
if there's a crust or something like that, that we can understand, right.
So you have to burn that off. That's
right, right. So that makes a lot of sense.
Layer,
right.
What are we talking about? The inner layer?
Huh?
The outer layer or the inner
the
layer?
The outer layer. The outer layer. What Sylvia says makes a lot of sense. I mean, let's say you're grilling something. All right. You know that something always stays on the grill. As much as you try to clean the darn thing, usually something sticks over there. So if you want to burn it out, it'll remove that stuff that's over there, so that would be the klipa, in other words, the covering, the shell, if you wish, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it. So, right.
That reminds me of Pesach, when we burn our stove.
Right, right.
What, for 20 minutes or whatever it is, to bring it up to...
You have to bring it up to the highest heat that you possibly can. Right, right.
Well,
so if there were any food cooked on, it would burn off.
That's correct. Right, right.
Basically, all you have is...
Right, right. It's correct. Okay, so that's a very good example of what they're talking about over here. The case on Magilan, and how about when it comes to boiling out? So Amar Rav Huna said, Yoro Katana Besoch Yoro Gedona. He says, if you have a small pot, you boil it out in a big pot. A large pot. In other words, so it'll sink and just boil out.
As long as the entire
Right. So, answering the next question is, right, you're a gadol of mine, but what if it's a big pot? What do you do? So he says, okay, so he says, so we're talking about kashering in general.
Huh?
Talking about kashering in general. Right, right. So he says, Tashma, listen, he says, Dahu Dudo Dahavai Beirava Kavya. There was a big pot in the house of Rava Kavya. So Ahadar lay, so he surrounded it. Next side of the page, last side, I involved on the face.
Got a couple,
huh?
What does that mean?
Okay. So, he surrounded it, he says, Gadafna Delisha Akuma, with a rim of dough. This is what Rashi explains, right? Around the mouth of it, so that you could put in a load of water, right? And then the boiling water will pass over this rim that you put on. In other words, they have to, well, let's go back to the text, all right? Malyuho, and he fills it, the Malyuho Mayo, he fills it with water, right? And then the Artucha, and, excuse me, and he gets it boiling, okay? So, as I said, I was quoting Rashi before. The Rashi says, you know, it has to boil over. So this rim will make sure that it'll hold it, and then it'll boil over as well. Okay. Of course, what we do sometimes is we throw in a hot stone or a hot piece of apple or something like that, Lord, to make
sure
it's
still going
to
go over the top of the
But
river.
It should go over the top, right. Yeah. Once it's gone over the top, you can stop the process, you know.
Right, okay. Well, why does he put a ring of dough?
To make sure that everything within the pot itself is kosher.
But you know what? If the rim is covered with dough, then the rim is not kosher.
Well, it's outside the rim. He did it around, you know, on the outside of the rim. So that presumably the rim itself got kosher somehow.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. So Omar Robas, Robas said, "Man, the Chaki, oh boy, what a smart guy he is." The Nevat Gehodilso, right? To that you can do something like this. He loved Rabbi Kavya, the other Rabbi. If it weren't for someone as great, you know, as Rabbi Kavya, who was a great man, he says, to think up. Right, right.
This is supposed to keep the water in and also make it flow over?
Yes, to the point that it'll boil over, correct.
Yeah, I had a problem with that.
Okay.
That would remove the dough, wouldn't it?
Yes. Right.
Make it really over.
Right.
But
Dr.
Miller says it's on the outside.
Right, outside, right, exactly.
But on the inside of it.
On the outside, otherwise it wouldn't get covered.
Right, because the rim should be covered.
The dough,
right.
Yeah.
Then the
right.
water
would
be. It wouldn't be covered. Because
right.
It's on the outside.
Right.
I don't understand.
Well, it's sort of jutting up a little.
Oh, okay.
So, I know. So when it runs over, the dough will absorb the water.
Yeah, or whatever. But it's all right. It could make a mess.
Because it's running over the top.
Right.
It'll go into the
important
dough.
Thing is that it will go off the top. Right.
All right.
Okay.
Don't you have to have the water hit the outside of the pot?
No, only the inside.
Only the
inside. The inside, the rim. Yeah.
The outside, you know, you watch.
It's going to go over.
The outside is
yeah.
the inside.
Talking really
about
the
fire.
I think the dough would absorb the water as it starts running over.
Right.
I don't think that was too popular.
All right.
I don't think so either.
Okay.
Say
it. He says he was a great man. And we'll do, this is the last sentence that we'll learn tonight. Kosova, because he has the opinion, and this is one of the major principles, I have to tell you, Givolo Kachpolto, that the way it absorbed, this is the way it's going to release whatever it had inside it. You understand? In other words, whatever Trefkite was absorbed, you have to use the same process in order to get rid of it. If it was burnt in fire, I mean, if it's used for grilling, for example, then you have to burn it out. If you use it for cooking, then you have to cook it out, boil it out. So, right, exactly.
That's the easiest thing.
Right, right.
That's the most logical thing.
Right, right. Okay.
Yeah, that's very logical.
Right, right. And then it's sotsots. And if it's like little drops or something like that, so the same thing, he says, polto, so you get rid of those little drops, whatever they are. Okay, but as I said,
polto,
kachpolto, the way it absorbs, literally swallows, is the way it gets rid of it. Okay, that's the basic principle. Okay, we shall stop at this point. Next week, Amir Hashem will finish the next few lines that
There's
we have.
There's a little olive there, and that little...
Okay. Tonight is the 19th of March in the year 2008, and we are now with Gemara Vedazora, Ayin Vav of its base, and we're about to complete the study of the tractate. You have Ahmed Olive?
Yeah, this is an Ahmed Olive.
You need this.
Here.
Thank you. Now.
Okay. We're continuing right now. The Mishnah said, the last part of the Mishnah said, Hasakin Shofo Vehitahora, that if you have a knife course, we're talking about a life of Avodah Zarah, but nevertheless, we know that there are certain basic principles that we learned that apply not just to Avodah Zarah, but also in general. You have a kasha, you have a problem with kashrus, so this is it. And as we had just the line before, if you remember, the principle we learned was kevoyle kachpolta, right?
What's the first word of the line that we're looking for?
See, polto benitzotos. It would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth line. And hasakin begins right in the middle of the line, okay? But the last thing that we learned prior to this is that kevolo kach polto, the principle is that the way it absorbed the tarfus, so this is the way it has to be expelled, okay? And that's why we have all these various methods that we were talking about, you know, rinsing and boiling and burning out, etc., etc., I mean, that we learned. So with knives, there is something a little bit different, although Tosfos, I have to tell you, disputes it greatly, okay? It says Hasakin Shofar Vehitora. This is what the Mishnah says, that the knife, what you have to do is that you literally you have to like polish it, but that means you go over it with an abrasive cloth or something like that, and then it says it becomes clean. Well, it's not quite exactly the method. So Amar Ukba Bachoma. So Rukba Bachom, it says, V'no atzor asora p'yevim b'chalka. What you have to do is to stick it 10 times into the ground. So Amar Rav Huna of the raid of Rav Yehoshua, Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yehoshua, said, V'karka she'no avuda. You have to put it into ground which has not been tilled. Because obviously if it's tilled, it's too soft and it wouldn't do anything. So what you need actually is hard soil in order to do it, but not so hard that it's going to break the knife. So you have to find hard soil in order to do it, and you stick it in 10 times. Okay. Now, as I said, Tosfos actually has it disagrees in many ways, and even Rashi, for example, points out that Afal P Sheshofo, even though it says he polishes it or wipes it, but it's so unclean. The Yeshomim Shemishav Shefo Bevegim Tzemer, first of all, it says they use a wool cloth on it, She'eino Cholok, because that's not smooth. If you use a smooth cloth, it's not going to do anything, but you have to have something which is rough, Umavir Shabdaduso, and that will remove whatever fat has been accumulated. But Tosfos has a feeling, first of all, they make a distinction between different types of knives. According to Tosfos, there's a difference between a small knife and a big knife. Small knife, they say you can do it in this particular way, because in general, what are you using a small knife for? You're using it usually for cold, you're not using it for something hot. And we see that this is a principle also that the Gemara text is also going to stress. Whereas if you use something, a knife that would be used hot, they give the example that you use a knife, for example, like a spit. You know, you stick a knife through and hold it over the fire or something like that. But in that particular case, that already is subject to the other law that we learned, that you have to use a libun, you have to burn it out in order to do it. Or in other cases, if it's a knife that's used, I don't know, for stirring in a pot or something, hot boiling water, then in that case, they say you should do that. So just sticking in the ground is not enough under those circumstances. But a small knife, which normally is used with cold things, then in that particular case, this is the method that you can use in order to kosher it. This is what Tosfos has to tell us. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Now, in the meantime, Omar Rav Kana said, "V'sakin yofa she'ain bo gubas." He says the knife has to be in excellent shape without any little pits or something in there, indentations, pits or something like that. Because if it's a zigzag knife or it's a serrated knife, then that method doesn't work for it. Okay? And, yeah. Tanya Namehoke, we also have a Baraisa to the same effect, which has Sakin Yofa. It has to be a knife in excellent condition, shame or gumas. So that's what you are, no asor peodim bakara. This is what you dig 10 times into the ground. Omer Avuna Bereda of Yeshua, Lechol Bot Soine. So he adds the following. He says that the knife, once it's been kashered, it should only be used for cold things, not for hot things. Okay? Kihod Bar Yehuda, and now they bring an interesting maaser. Okay? It's a story about Bar Yehuda, Uvati Bar Tuvi. Alright, so who is this Vati Bar Tuvi? So we'll discover that he was an Evid Kenani who had been sort of emancipated by his master, and as I've mentioned time and again, I mean, that the case of the Evet Kedani, you still have to have him circumcised, still put him into the mikveh, and he's subject to all kinds of laws that accept that, you know, he cannot observe every single mitzvah because he's subject to the whims of his master, okay? But nevertheless, he is a Jew, even though, shall we say, a lower caste Jew. Okay? Mm. So, but as we'll see, pardon me?
He's not a Shabbos guy.
No, he's not a Shabbos guy. No, no. Definitely not. He's subject. I mean, it's written, Avdechom, Amoschom, right? I mean, that you, your maidservant, your manservant, etc., etc., even your cattle has to rest on Shabbos. So don't forget that, okay? So, so at any rate, obviously, this Bati Bar Tuvi happened to be a big shot, because where were Yehuda and Bati Bar Tuvi? So, Habi Yasvei Kamedu Shvur Malka. Shvur Malka, or King Shapur, was the king of Persia, the king of the Persian Empire. Of course, it's much later than Ahasuerus, quite a few centuries afterwards, right? But he was contemporary with the Chachamim in Babylonia, okay? And of course, Babylonia was one of the provinces of the Persian Empire, okay? So, you can imagine, if the king invites you, obviously, he's not going to invite, you know, every time Dick and Harry off the street. So, obviously, even this Bati Bar Tuvi happens to be a person of some importance. All right. Okay. Vahu Gavra Lav by Yisrael, so the Gemara tells us, but he was not a Jew in the fullest sense. Wait a minute.